Galatians chapter 3, verse 13. Now Christ hath redeemed us from the curse of the law, being made a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone that hangeth on a tree. Again, Christ hath redeemed us from the curse of the law, being made a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone that hangeth on a tree. In the paper yesterday, an article was tucked away that wasn't even on the front page. The story comes out of La Grande, Oregon. A 16-year-old boy was sentenced Friday to 30 years in prison for the stabbing death of a 15-year-old girl whom refused to have sex with him at a party. This fella, Mark Trice of La Grande, sobbed during the 90-minute sentencing before acting circuit judge Eric Valentine. Authorities said Trice beat the 95-pound girl until she was completely unconscious. Unconscious, pardon me. Then stabbed her to death with a steak knife he took from the kitchen. He addressed his victim's family. If I could give my life right now to get back with you, he said, I would. Valentine imposed a 20-year prison term for the murderer and another 10 years under the state's dangerous offender law. Valentine is currently being held at McLaren School in Woodburn for another unrelated burglary and another assault. From everything this country has seen of you, the bottom line is you don't have a conscience, Judge Valentine said. Certainly no culture tolerates the kind of behavior that you've been engaged in. The problem is with Judge Valentine's comment is that we do tolerate such behavior. This is not even a front page story. A 15-year-old girl at a party, and by the way, all of you kids, let that be a warning to you. You hang around places where people aren't walking with the Lord, don't care about the Lord, and you can end up getting hurt. Oh, I don't mean just stabbed with a steak knife, although that could happen. But emotionally, physically, mentally, you can get beat up badly by hanging around the places where people that don't care about the Lord, have no interest in walking with the Lord, hang out. And this little girl, no doubt, going to that party, thought it was going to be cool to be there that evening. But when this guy forced himself upon her and she wouldn't respond, he beat her silly and stabbed her repeatedly. And Valentine, the judge, said our culture doesn't tolerate it, but in reality we do. And that's the problem with our culture today. You're aware of that. Stories like this don't even make page one. They're so common. Criminals, after serving only a fraction of their sentence, go out and do the same kinds of offenses again and again and again. This is not news to you. Our whole culture senses deeply, innately, something is very wrong. This should not be. We've gone very much soft on crime, regardless of what kind of legislation they pass in the Senate and the House in the so-called crime bill, you see. It doesn't deal with the issue. What is the issue, John? Israel, a theocracy, governed by God and the Word of God, you see. Israel had no prisons at all. Old Testament Israel had no penitentiaries, no prisons, no penal system. Why? Because they dealt with crime swiftly and severely. If a person was disobedient, if a person was unresponsive, if a person was cursing his mom and dad, his parents, he would be taken outside of the city and stoned. I'm not talking marijuana. I'm talking rocks. Now, kids in that culture didn't talk back to mom and dad. You see one or two kids being stoned and you realize, hey, this isn't a prudent move to curse mom and dad. Crime of all sorts were dealt with severely and quickly, and so there was no need for prisons. The crime rate was infinitesimal compared to what our culture is going through presently. And the way that crime was dealt with in many cases was through or by means of stoning. People would take rocks in their hands and throw rocks at the offenders until the offenders were dead. The people that threw the rocks were those that were bringing the accusation. Thus, you wouldn't bring accusation lightly, knowing that it would be from your hand that judgment would be meted out, you see. It was not cruelty, but God was interested in keeping a culture of people free from the kind of junk that is polluting our culture and our nation presently. And so people just knew that man, if they broke the law of God, there were certain immediate consequences. Now, if a person did a particularly heinous, brutal, terrible kind of sin, he would not be stoned to death. He would be hanged on a tree. Stoning was the normal form of capital punishment for capital offenses. And capital offenses included cursing your parents, disrespecting or dissing your parents. Certain kinds of adultery and fornication were dealt with by stoning. Homosexuality was dealt with by stoning. Killing somebody was dealt with by stoning. And there are various kinds of offenses the scriptures give that God declared, hey, these things need to be dealt with quickly, efficiently, effectively, and immediately, lest it leaven your whole culture and ruin your people. But if a particularly rotten sin was done, the person wouldn't be stoned, he would be hung on a tree. Well, you say, my goodness, what kind of a sin would it take to get somebody hung on a tree, even as Galatians 3, in quoting Deuteronomy chapter 21, declares, cursed is everyone who hangs upon a tree. Particularly cursed is that person. You say, well, what kind of crime would merit that kind of situation? It's kind of surprising. There is a story in the Old Testament that shows us clearly what in God's eyes caused the hanging of a person upon a tree to come about. Mass murder, you say? Bestiality? What would it take for in God's eyes there to be a man hanging on a tree? There is one story in the Old Testament that deals with this. And it's sort of shocking. I want to summarize the story for you this morning. He was a guy that seemed to have everything going for him. He was the handsomest man in all of the nation. In fact, the Bible says, the Word of God declares, from the crown of his head to the sole of his feet, there was not a single blemish found. He never bought a tube of Claricel. He had no flaw in his appearance whatsoever. He was the handsomest man that anyone had ever seen. He had long flowing hair. His hair was flowing down past his shoulders, down his back. He was famous for it. He was the Fabio of his day. He looked simply marvelous. With long, flowing hair. Once a year, though, he had to get it cut a bit. And we are told that when the barbers cut his hair, the weight was 200 shekels worth of weight, according to the king's measure. which is about 5 times more than normal hair would produce. He had 5 times the amount of hair as a normal young man would. He had to get it pulled because it would tilt his head, man. It was just flowing, this beautiful, gorgeous hair down his back. The handsomest man that anyone had ever seen. Not only was he unbelievably good looking, but he had a winning personality. In fact, we are told in the story that he actually stole the hearts of the men of Israel. They would listen to him and look at him and say, "Man, we want to be with him. We want to be like him." He stole the hearts of the whole nation. So men were saying, "We want to be with him." Women were swooning over him. Not only was he incredibly handsome and had a winning personality, but he had prestige. Why? He was a prince. Literally. His dad was the king of the most powerful empire of that day. His mom, Maaka, she was a princess from Geshur. So he had this handsome countenance. He had this engaging, winning personality. He had prestige, man, and all that went along with that position financially. And his name seems to imply what people thought about him, at least for a season. His name means the producer or father of peace. He was a guy that evidently seemed to be one who was producing peace. The name Father of Peace, Absalom. Maybe you remember his story. Oh, this guy that had everything going for him, whose name meant producer or father of peace, was anything but at peace within his own heart. For you see, he was a man who was troubled within greatly. He was ticked, burning with rage inside for his beautiful sister, Tamar, whose name means palm tree. She, like her brother, also possessed extreme, unusual beauty. So much so that there in the palace, as Tamar lived in the palace along with Absalom and many, many other children of David, who was the king that I was alluding to, the oldest son of David, Amnon, looked at palm tree and said, "Man, she's beautiful." Amnon was actually a half-brother of Tamar. And the more he looked at her, the more he felt feelings of lust for her. And he became sick, literally, with lust. Jonadab, one of the cousins who was in the palace, said, "Hey, Amnon, you're not looking so good. What's cooking?" He said, "Man, I'm in love. I can't eat. I can't sleep. Palm tree over here, man. She's captured my heart." "Hey, you want her? You're the number one son of David. You're the heir apparent. You're the oldest prince, aren't you? Yeah? You want her? Here's what you do. Pretend like you're seriously ill. Send word to your father, the king, saying that, hey, you want Tamar to come in and fix some food for you and feed you. And then when she comes in with the food and begins to feed you, grab her and have your way with her." You think, what would cause Amnon to heed such advice? Well, When lust is ruling you, you don't think straight. And he said, hey, sounds great. Word was sent to David that Amnon was seriously sick and wanted Tamar to come in and feed him. And she came in, and when she did so, he grabbed her and raped her. She cried out to him, said, don't do this thing. Ask David. He'll let you marry me. He'll allow it to happen, but don't do this thing. You'll shame yourself. You'll shame me. You'll bring disaster upon yourself and disaster upon us all. Don't do this. But you see, lust demands to be satisfied. Oh, I love you, baby. I just have to have you. No, you don't love her. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love wants the best for the other person. What you should say is, oh, baby, I lust you. I've got to have you to satisfy my animal instincts, my lust. I'm going to lust after you. I'm going to do my thing with you and then trash you. That's what that guy is saying, girls. When he starts to say, oh, I just love you. I have to express myself. You say, no, you don't love me. You lust. If you loved me, you wouldn't want to do this to me and take advantage of me. Lust demands. He raped her. She shredded her clothes. She put ashes upon that long flowing hair. She wept bitterly. And Amnon, when he was through having his way, looked at her and said, I hate you. And it says in the Bible that the hatred that he felt towards Tamar after having his way with her was exceedingly greater than the love which he felt for her before he raped her. Girls, let me tell you how to lose your boyfriend. Give in. The guy that once said, oh, I love you, once he's through with you, will hate you. Lust is so sad because once it gets its way, that which once was thought to be love proves to be hatred. It's sad. It's a tragedy. How many people are once involved in relationships where lust brought them together only to find now they literally hate each other? There's no communication. There's no relationship. There's just bitterness and hatred. And that's the way lust is. Ah, the Father's right when he tells us to just mellow out and wait. Not give in to the lusts of the flesh. I hate her. Get her out of here, he said. And she went out and went crying and ashes in her hair and garments ripped to David. And David heard about this and it said he was very wroth. I like the King James. Wroth. That means ticked. What? Your brother raped you? And he was angry inside. But here's the interesting thing. Although David was angry, it says that he did nothing to discipline Amnon. Why? Could be that David's poetic kind of artsy personality lacked perhaps the strength to deal with his son. Possible. Or perhaps, like many of us parents, David desperately desired to be liked by his children. More than correct them. More than see them walk in a way that's right and good. He wanted to be liked by his kids. So he didn't want to deal with Amnon. He wanted Amnon to like him. Tragic. And that could be a reason why he didn't discipline him. But most likely, the reason was because David himself was guilty of fulfilling his own lusts with a woman named Bathsheba. indulging his own lusts. Seeing her from his rooftop one day, he sent for her, had an adulterous relationship with her, then murdered her husband, Uriah the Hittite, to cover up his dastardly deed. See, this is the problem with sin. Mom and Dad, when we sin, we lose authority with our kids to speak into their lives. You can't talk to your kids about the dangers of alcohol if you're sipping on wine with dinner. You can't deal with the drug problem if you yourself are dependent upon acceptable kinds of habits and drugs, you see. You lose authority. You lose credibility. And David was angry with Amnon, my heir apparent. He's blowing it, but what can I do? I'm guilty of worse sins than him. So he did nothing. For 2 years, the brother of Tamar, the woman that was raped, the brother of Tamar, Absalom, was burning inside. Why isn't Dad doing something? Why isn't he dealing with this situation? And it says that he hated his brother Amnon and he hated his father David. Dad, want your kids to hate you? Here's how. Don't bring about correction in the home. Don't be strong in the family. You think you're winning their favor. In reality, you're earning their skepticism and hatred. It always interests me that the most undisciplined of kids are the ones that hate their mom and dad. The parents that try the hardest to be a buddy are often the ones who are ended up mocked and despised and hated. I have watched over the years now as I am getting older. I've watched kids. And I see those kids that have been disciplined and cared for and taught in the ways of God, who have had strong parameters placed around them, and I see them growing up respecting and loving their parents. And then I see parents who say, oh, well, he's just 16 or she's just 18 or let them do whatever. And I watch what happens. Their children despise their parents. Interesting. Dad, be warned. You see things that are wrong in your family and you don't deal with them. Like David, you might be burning inside, but you fail to deal with it firmly. You will not earn that son's favor. He will end up despising you and mocking you in his heart. Absalom, for 2 years, angry. Finally, he said, I'm going to deal with it myself. Father, he said, hey, my servants have just finished shearing the sheep at Baal Hazor outside of Jerusalem. Dad, father, we're going to have a party. The work is done. We're going to have sort of a sheep shearing celebration. Come and join us. Oh, son, David said, Absalom, I can't get away. The tasks of state, the job, my obligations are just too great. I can't get away. Okay, Dad. Well, listen, can my brothers come? Especially Amnon. Why Amnon? David said. Well, all the sons are welcome. Can they all come and celebrate with me? And David must have had a suspicion, but yet, for some reason, he said, okay, boys can go with you. And off they go to Baal Hazor. Absalom, good-looking, engaging, prestigious, Absalom. He now puts his plot into action. Bring out the wine, he says. Man, wherever, whenever alcohol is flowing, you can always be sure that trouble will be following. You listen to me, kids. Once they break out the bud, you split the scene. Break out the wine, Absalom said. Hey, this is good stuff, Abby, the boys said as they began to drink. and they became drunk. Absalom then raised his hand and gave the signal. And Absalom's servants, these guys that were so enamored and impressed with this big, powerful, handsome man, stood up and they thrust their swords into Amnon. They murdered him on the spot. The rest of David's sons, who were hiccuping and stumbling about, ran for their mules, their donkeys, and they got on their donkeys and they began to ride away, riding for their lives. In the meantime, word came back to David. David, David, a terrible thing has happened at Baal-Hazor. There's been a terrible slaughter. All of your sons have been killed by Absalom. All of them are dead. And David, it says, rent his clothes and wept and fell on his face. Oh no. And then Jonadab, the same one who advised Amnon to pretend like he was sick, to rape Tamar. Jonadab came in and said, hey, David, don't worry. Not everybody's dead. It's just Amnon. Absalom has killed him. At that point, Absalom knew that he needed to run for his life. He mounted up his mule and he went to Geshur, where his mom, Maacah, was from. Now, David could have easily sent the army to chase him down and bring him back, but David didn't do so. David let him go. David allowed rape in his home and now murder of his son, and he wouldn't deal with the situation. For 3 years, Absalom was there in Geshur. For 3 long years. It says that David, once he recovered from mourning over Amnon, his number one son, it says then his heart longed for Absalom. Daily his heart pined. He longed for Absalom, who was off in exile. Joab, David's general, his right-hand man, saw that David was being eaten away, lamenting over the situation. Joab knew, hey, we've got to get Absalom back here, or it's going to drive David crazy. It's been 3 years. David needs to be restored with his son. So he went to a woman, an elderly woman probably from Tekoa, a wise woman. Listen, psst, come here. Here's what I want you to do. Psst, 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 psst. And this lady from Tekoa went in before David and said, sire, I've got a problem. Yes, what is it? Sire, I'm a widow woman. I have 2 grown sons. They take care of me. They watch out for me. But one day in the field, they got in a fight and one killed the other. And now the people in my community are demanding that my living son be put to death too. But if that happens, I will have no son to care for me. And the coal, the spark of my heart will be extinguished, she said. What should I do? Oh, David, king, sire, help me, help me, this woman said as she was emotionally presenting her case. David said, what? They want to take your living son and murder him, kill him, execute him? He says, woman, truly I say to you that not one hair on his head shall be hurt. Interesting phrase. Not one hair shall be hurt. Because with that phrase, the woman says, one more thing, sire. Speaking of hair, remember your son? What about you, she says? You've got a son who you have put into exile. Oh, she says, don't you know that our days are short and like water spilt upon the ground, the days cannot be gathered up again. In other words, David, you're losing time that you could be sharing with your son. And then she said, number two, God is not a respecter of persons, which is implying, David, God forgave you. of your terrible sin. David, time is short. David, God forgave you. David, number three, find a way. Forgive your son. Bring him back. And David said, I smell a rat here. David said, did Joab put you up to this? Oh, the woman said, you're so smart. No one can go to the right or to the left, King David, without you knowing about it. And David said, send for Joab. Joab, bring back my son. Joab then went to Geshur, tracked down Absalom, who had been in exile for those years, and brought him back. But when Absalom came into the city of Jerusalem, David refused to see him, to talk with him. He turned his face, we are told, from Absalom, and for 2 years, Absalom had no communication with his dad whatsoever. Absalom said, Joab, I want to talk to my dad. He doesn't want to see you, Absalom. Please, let me talk to him. A second time, Absalom said to Joab, he won't do it. Very well. Absalom then had an idea. He took fire and he began to light the fields of Joab on fire. Arson. The fire was raging. Joab came in and said, what have you done? And he said, look, I've got to talk to my dad. How can I get his attention? Well, you got it. Mom and dad, sometimes kids do crazy things to get your attention. What does it take to get your attention? What fire do they have to ignite to say, Dad, help me? Be strong with me, Dad. Talk to me, Dad. Deal with me, Dad. What fire does your son or daughter have to ignite? What trouble do they have to get in before they finally get your attention, where they finally get my attention? Send him in, David said. Send him in. Okay. 5 years had now gone by. And it says, when David saw him, he wept and he kissed his son. He kissed him. But the plot thickens. After Absalom received the kiss of his father, we read then he went out of the palace. He got a new chariot. He had 50 men run before him as he rode his chariot. I mean, it was the hot new vehicle, man. It was the hot wheels. 50 men running in front of him saying, Absalom is coming, Absalom is coming, as his hair blew in the breeze, as his stereo played ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. Oh, he was hot. He was cool. And he went tripping out, check out these wheels. 50 men. Absalom, Absalom, Absalom. And he would drive around the city and stop in front of the gate of the palace where he sat daily. People would be coming in to try and get an appointment with David. They had matters to discuss with the king or problems that they were trying to figure out. And David was a busy guy, understandably. And when they saw Absalom sitting there, the prince, they came to him and they would bow before him. And Absalom would say, don't bow to me. And he would throw his arms around him and kiss him. Hey, man. Hey, handshake. Give me five. You're my buddy. What? Me? I'm nobody. You're Absalom. Yeah, you're my buddy. Really? Yeah. Wait, what's your problem? Well, I got this issue that's really plaguing me, or this problem that's a real dilemma for me. Oh, man, I can relate to you, Absalom said. If I was king, we would take care of that matter. And day after day, he was outside of the gate telling people, well, if I was king, or if I was dad, or if I was boss, Boy, if I was the boss, if I was the principal, if I was the coach, if I was the king, man, I tell you, it would be different. Ha ha. Oh, wow, we wish you could be king. He stole their hearts, this good-looking, prestigious, rich, seemingly together individual who was a mess inside. And one by one, the men of Jerusalem began to say, hey, Absalom, you're number one. After Absalom felt like that he had enough men behind him, he went before his father, the king. Dad, when I was in Geshur, you know, when I was in exile for those 3 years, I made a promise, a vow to God, saying that I would offer him a sacrifice in Hebron, a little town outside of Jerusalem. I need to go and do that, Dad. Okay, son, you can leave the city and go make your sacrifice. Well, he got in his chariot, ba-boom, 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 with his men out in front, Absalom, 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 and off he went to Hebron. But you see, he intended to make no sacrifice. He wasn't going to church to worship the Lord. He had another agenda altogether. He wasn't going to Hebron, the place of worship, to really worship. He had a plan, and he already put the word out. When you hear the trumpets blown from Hebron, spread the news that Absalom is taking over. When he got to Hebron, sound the trumpets. Doo-doo-doo-loo. The trumpets were sounded. Absalom is taking over. Reverberated throughout the land. They came and told David, David, the trumpets are sounding. The people are moving. Suddenly they're proclaiming Absalom is their king. And David, I'm sure not surprised, said, we'll leave. We'll go now quickly from Jerusalem. We'll abdicate our place of power. We'll go. We'll leave. Obviously, the crowds are mounting. The people are crying for Absalom. We'll leave. Abiathar and Zadok, the two priests, said, we'll grab the ark and we'll go with you. No, no, no. Do not allow the ark to leave Jerusalem. Do not show God on the run. God is not on the run. It's me, because I didn't deal with my sons, because I have sinned. But God must not be on the run. Zadok, Abiathar, priests, you stay here. You'll do more good here anyway. You be my eyes and ears. You tell me what's going on and send word to me. Send your young sons, your fleet-footed sons, Ahimaaz and Jonathan, and send them to me when you find out what's going on in the city, and let me know. Be my spies. Okay, they said. And David took a few of his men with him, left his 10 wives to keep house in the palace, which showed that he knew that he would be back. And he said, let's go. Ittai, the Gittite, a Philistine guy, says, hey, Dave, we're coming with you. 600 of us are traveling with you. What? You're Philistines. You don't have to travel with me. We've been with you all these years. You conquered us, and now we've become impressed with you. We're traveling with you. Where you go, we're going to go. If you die, we'll die beside you. Really? Yeah. Okay, come on, guys. So here goes David, barefoot, cover over his head, with Philistines traveling with him. And off they go outside of the city to Mahanaim, a little town. At this time, as he's going outside of the city, Hushai, one of David's advisors, comes. David, let me come with you. Oh, Hushai, you'll be a burden. You're too old and you're too valuable. Go back. Pretend like you're on Absalom's side and give advice to him, so to speak. Bad advice. Get it? Wink, wink. Got it, Your Highness. Yes, sir. I'll do it, Hushai said. Absalom is now in Jerusalem. There was a man that came from David's advisors, his number one advisor, Ahithophel, who sided with Absalom. He said, now here's what you've got to do. Consolidate your power quickly. Take these 10 wives up on top of the palace roof and have intercourse with them. In so doing, you'll show you're despising your dad. Do it right in front of the whole nation. And then, while that's happening, let me take 12,000 men. Let me track down David quickly. He's only got 600 Philistines with him. We'll track him down. We'll do him in. Fabio, Absalom, said, sounds cool. Took the wives of David, had relations with them. But Hushai said, wait. Before you send out this army of 12,000, Hushai, who is still on David's side, the secret agent, hey, if you try and get David now, man, those Philistines are going to fight to the death. David's a sly old codger. Don't try it with 12,000 men. Here's what you got to do. Blow the trumpets, get a huge army of hundreds of thousands of soldiers. When they all gather, then you move. Ahithophel heard that and said, that is bad advice. You give your dad time, that cagey old codger. He'll regroup, he'll work something out. You can't listen to this. And Absalom says, me leading an army of hundreds of thousands, I like that. Ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. Cool. I'm going to listen to you, Hushai. Thanks, Ahithophel, but no thanks. Ahithophel looked at Absalom, got on his mule, rode home, and hung himself. He knew that Absalom was a fool. Why did Ahithophel, by the way, side with Absalom after being David's advisor for so many years? One reason. His granddaughter was a beautiful lady whose name was Bathsheba. All those years, Ahithophel was bitter. Who are you bitter against? If you don't deal with it, it's going to eventually cause you to go into betrayal and murder of some sort, assassinating somebody's character. Ahithophel was ticked off because Bathsheba was taken advantage of and Uriah was killed. But listen, don't tune out. Listen, what happened? Ahithophel's sin became 100 times worse because not just one man died, but thousands would be put to death because of Ahithophel's encouraging Absalom's rebellion. You don't forgive a person. You don't let something go from the past. You keep it in your heart. You let it stir around. You'll end up committing a more grievous sin than the sin that you're mad about. He hung himself. David was now able to get some time. He crossed over the Jordan River. Being informed of the plan by Jonathan and by Ahimaaz, the sons of Zadok and Abiathar the priests, he now regrouped and plotted his strategy. Okay, Absalom is into chariots. Ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. We're going to go up to the woods of Ephraim. We'll go over to Ephraim in the north. We'll engage the soldiers there because chariots can't work in the woods. Okay, the soldiers said that day. And they went and set up their ambushments there in the woods of Ephraim. They sounded the trumpet saying, we're ready for battle. Absalom with his boys says, well, so are we. And they marched towards David. But Absalom had never fought a day in his life. He was Fabio, too busy posing for magazine covers, too busy presenting his cool image. Boy, I hate that. Boom. If you're posing for magazine covers, quit. He never fought a day in his life. Just always cultivating an image, a cool image. Huh. Loser. So now he's got his chariot and he's got his many, many men, but he doesn't know what he's doing. He goes into battle. He finds himself now, this is unfamiliar territory, these woods of Ephraim. Whew. And the men of David begin to spring out from everywhere, behind the trees, in the woods. And Absalom realizes, boy, I don't know what I'm doing here, and my men are getting wiped out. And suddenly, he gets on his mule, he leaves his boomer behind and gets on a mule and begins to ride. He rides. His mule goes out of control. His mule is freaked out. And as he rides and his hair is flowing behind him, probably thinking, this is my good side over here. Who knows what he's thinking? But he's riding, no doubt posing for another cover, riding away when suddenly as he's going through the woods of Ephraim, boom, his hair gets caught. His hair. Now this is the intriguing thing to me. His hair gets caught. The mule keeps going. He's hanging by his hair. Now, if you're in battle, if you're in a war, the answer is very simple. What do? You take your sword and you cut your hair. But he either was so inexperienced in battle that he didn't even have a weapon with him, or he said, not my hair. Anything but my hair. I would rather die than lose my hair. I can't figure the story out. I don't know. Did he not have a sword, a knife with him, even a Swiss army? What's the deal? He's in battle. Or is he just that vain? Is he that stuck on himself? I don't know. He's hanging there by his hair. One of the soldiers sees Absalom hanging by his hair and quickly finds Joab, who is leading the troops in battle. They left David behind. And Joab, Absalom, we saw him. He's hanging on a tree. He's hanging on a tree by his hair. Cursed is everyone that hangs on a tree. He's hanging by a tree, by his hair on a tree. Well, why didn't you kill him? Didn't you hear, Joab, what David said when we went out that day and set up for the battle? Didn't he tell you and Abishai, the other general, and Ittai the Gittite? Didn't he tell you commanders to be careful not to hurt his son? I heard him. You should have killed him. And Joab immediately mounted up and went to where Absalom was still hanging by his hair. And he took three darts, boom, 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 and he fired those darts right into the side, into the chest of Absalom, who died. Cut him down, boom, boom. Put stones on him, bam. Stones were piled upon him. The soldiers then realized their leader, Absalom, was done. The rebellion was over. And they began to flee from the battle scene. David had to know. Joab said to Cushai, you, Cushai, run back and tell David. Tell David that the battle's over, that his son is dead. Cushai was sent. Cushai gave the word. David, the battle's over. But what about my son? Would to God that all of your enemies were like your son. David knew he was dead. And David cried out, oh, Absalom, Absalom, my son, my son, my son. And he wept exceedingly. And he said this, would to God that I could die for my son. Oh, Absalom, oh, Absalom, oh, Absalom. His heart was broken over his wayward, rebellious, iniquitous, murderous son. You say, John, interesting story, but what has this to do with Galatians 3? Everything. I'll keep you only 5 minutes more. Semi-promise. But understand this. Cursed is everyone that hangs on a tree. Who hung on a tree? Some mass murderer? Some mad rapist? No. A man who was proud. Are you proud? No, I don't think so. Do you pray? Not really. Then you're proud. The epitome of pride is prayerlessness. If I don't pray, what I am saying is, I can get through my day myself. I can take on that problem myself. I can control my destiny myself. Listen, a person who does not pray is proud. If you don't pray, then like Absalom, you're committing the same kind of sin. Do you rebel against your parents? Do you put them down? Then you're guilty of the same cursed sin as Absalom. I'm not speaking just to teens and children. I'm speaking to older people here too. How do you view your mother?
Well, the reason I'm such a mess is because Mom, I just read Mommy Dearest, and my problems are Mom or Dad.
You're guilty of the same cursed sin of Absalom. Are you a manipulator? Do you know how to kiss up like Absalom did? Oh, buddy.
Oh, come to Daddy. Come and tell me.
Because you have an agenda, not to help the person, but to consolidate your own power. Then you're guilty of the sin of Absalom. Do you manipulate people? Do you have ambition? Man, I'm going to take over. Whatever it takes to get to the top. I'll kiss up or I'll stab in the back. But whatever it takes to get ahead of that guy at work or to get that girl or to make that team or whatever it takes, man, I'm going to do it. Then you're guilty of the sin of Absalom. Cursed is every man who hangs on a tree. Who's on that tree? A man who's prideful, a man who manipulates, a man who is disobedient and disrespectful to his parents, a man who has ambition. That is who God says is especially cursed. And that's you. And that's me. We're Absalom, every one of us, to one degree or another. But wait. Oh, Absalom, I would die if you could live, David cried that day. Listen to the words of another, the son of David, Jesus Christ. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, I would gather you under my wings as a mother hen gathers her chicks. I want to save you, cursed Jerusalem. And I can die, Jesus would say, to give you life. For I will go to the tree, and I will hang on the tree in place of you. All of your pride and manipulation, rebellion, disobedience, sin, I will hang on the tree. I will take the place that belongs to Absalom and you and me. I will take it all, Jesus says. I will be the cursed one, the one who is so much different than Absalom. Absalom rebelled against his father. Jesus said, I always do the things that please my father. Absalom had beauty. It says of Jesus, there was no form or comeliness that we should desire him physically. Absalom blew the trumpet. Jesus walked in total humility. Oh, for you Bible students, if you wish, you can go on listing contrast after contrast between Jesus and Absalom. They're exactly opposite in every way, but they both hung on a tree. Absalom because of his sin, Jesus for your sin. And they threw rocks upon the corpse of Absalom. They covered him with the rocks. A pile of rocks, pardon me. Where he was entombed, they rolled a rock in front of the tomb of Jesus Christ after he hung on the tree. And guess what? He burst out. He's alive. The one who hung on the tree rose again from the dead, and says, you're forgiven. And today I'm here to say to you, fellow Absaloms, we belong on the tree. But Jesus died in place of us, and now we're forgiven, we're free. The Son of David cries, not just, O Jerusalem, but O Rogue Valley, O Applegate Amphitheater, O John Corson, I would gather you under my wing. O Johnny, 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 I forgive you, I love you, and I'm not just winking at your sin like David did so terribly, but I'm dealing with that sin with my own blood on Calvary. Gang, I'm here to say, cursed is everyone that hangs on a tree. It should have been you. It should have been me. But he who knew no sin was made sin for us, that we might be forgiven. And guess what? Today I'm here to say, I'm saved. I'm saved. I'm saved. I'm saved. I'm saved. I'm forgiven. I'm brought back from exile. My sins are washed away in the blood of Calvary. I'm free. I can talk to my King, the Father, anytime I want to. Not because I'm together. I'm Absalom. But because of Jesus and what he did for me on the tree. He hung in there for me. I'm saved. That's all I want to say today. I'm saved. I'm delighted. And I want you to be too. Let's pray. And so, Father, today, as we realize that we deserve to be hung on the same tree of Absalom, yet, Lord, even as David had feelings for his wayward son, oh, Absalom, Absalom, I would give my life. So, Father, you look at us, and in becoming a man, in Jesus Christ, you did give your life for us that we might live. And we are here to say thank you today. We just gather on this warm Sunday morning in this amphitheater to say, Father, thank you for saving us. And not just winking at sin, not dealing with it as David failed to do, but Lord, you provided for us by dying in place of us. And for that, we love you. We're grateful to you. And we give our lives this first day of another week to you. We choose to follow after you, Lord, to open up our hearts to you. And this we do in Jesus' name.